I've been with the district. This is going to be my 18th year, and I was really intimidated to do this because this is like super smart kid stuff. And
no, it's not.
But it kind of always felt that way, and it's so great and so cool for a million other reasons. But like, I loved being there learning it. I know it's nerdy.
Welcome to the SVS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I'm your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, my own personal website, BeardedTechEdGuy.com, and the We Learn blog on MySPS. I'm excited to bring you today's interview. We sat down with two amazing teachers over at Beale, but we'll get into that more of that later. First, a few announcements. If you've been following along with the blog, we've gone through three-part series on blended learning. Is it for you? We know that we learned a lot of things during our time of being remote and then concurrent learning, and now back in person. There was a lot of great things that we were able to do during that remote and concurrent time that maybe you want to continue in the classroom and blend those things back together. Check out the series of blog posts where we kind of walk through how you can do blended learning now that you are back in person and do true blended learning. So that's out there. If you go out to the Schoology resources inside of Schoology, we post our monthly newsletter, and that is up. You can also find that newsletter on the We Learn page on My SBS. And as always, the 22 tools for 2022, we are coming up to the end of the year. So get those badges before it's too late. So for this week's interview of the week, I met with Karen Toro and Courtney Saris over at Beale Elementary. Now, these two teachers I met during the summer. It was the first time of really talking with them about what they were doing in the classroom and what they were doing during summer school. They've spent a lot of time going through different trainings over the summer to learn more about computer science. So you're going to hear all about that in this week's episode. So take a listen.
My name is Courtney Saris. I'm a kindergarten teacher at Beale Elementary School. This fall, I'll be entering my fifth year teaching. Kindergarten's always been my passion, something I've always wanted to teach and do. So when this opportunity came up, it was ideal for me to go and learn more about computer science. I watched my kids try and learn computer science this year, and it was scary. I think they were afraid of it. I think they were fearful of it, as I was as a teacher as well. So I was really excited to go in and see how I could give a kindergarten perspective to it, as I always feel we are the forgotten grade of K to 12. So I'm really excited to give kindergarten that kind of voice and see what kind of extension and activities that we can give to them to help them understand coding better.
Hi, I'm Karen Toro, and I am a third grade teacher at Beale School. In September, this will be my 18th year teaching at Beale. I grew up in Springfield. I graduated from Springfield. I love my school. I love my students. I'm super excited to take the computer science into my classroom. I'm a departmentalized reading and writing teacher. I love doing that every day. I was very, very intimidated with the whole computer science aspect. I took the opportunity to learn more. As in May, I was not able to help my students with a project because I had no idea what they were doing. And it would look like a really cool activity, but I still had no idea what they were doing. But as I learned that my students can perform better in other subjects by knowing computer science, they are better problem solvers. They are more likely to attend college by being exposed to this. And it's not just computers and math and the algorithms. It's shy students talking more to explain themselves. It's the special ed students that are excited to explain because they can think it in their brain and then they get the words out because we give them a few sentence stems. It's everybody collaborating together on an even playing field, which is really exciting. And I can't wait to take these projects back to my classroom in the fall.
Well, it sounds like you both have a lot of great experience over the last year with computer science, but I want to start further back. And so, Courtney, you started teaching in Springfield 5 years ago. Karen, you've been here longer than 5 years. When you first started to see computer science start to creep up in the classroom, what was your initial reactions? What were your thoughts about it from a teacher perspective?
I think initially I was obviously scared because you hear coding and you think, well, people go to college for that and get degrees about that. Like, I'm just a kindergarten teacher. Like, I know the very basics. Like, I always think about kindergarten as a house. You know, you always want to make that really strong foundation. I never really thought you could bring computer science into kindergarten just because I always found it to be like, or thought of it as a very difficult process. Like, you had to have this very math science related brain to get into computer science. But as I have started to enter the coding field at the very beginning, like even with code.org and those very beginning lessons, I mean, they really focus on up, down, left, right, which in kindergarten, you think about math. We do directional words, up, down, left, right. So there was that kind of connection there. So I think for me, I have to really bring it back because I think about the keyboard in kindergarten. You know, you think of these little five-year-olds, they don't know their letters or they don't know their numbers yet. So how are they even going to have access to that keyboard or access to these programs where they don't even know those kind of concepts yet? So what can I do as their teacher to help them be successful, even with these small programs that just require, you know, up, down, left, right keys? So I think that for me is really the push because we think, oh, maybe these kids could do Ruby, maybe they could do this. But we really want to make sure they understand that up, down, left, right, on screen and off screen. You know, I always thought coding too as an on screen type of program. I didn't realize how much of it you could pull off of the screen for these students to practice these skills that they could then apply onto the computer. So that's been really cool for me to see too.
I think for me, when I thought about coding originally, I thought about really young, happy college students getting a firsthand intro at something that often comes so naturally to them. Like, I can work the computer and I can PowerPoint and I can text, but coding was a little bit intimidating. And we always, I know I have the best school and we say that we can learn things and not feel bad, but we feel bad. We feel bad when we don't catch on. So when I went to Boston, I did not know anybody. And then I saw Mike's there, Diane's there, I'm in trouble. But I said, I'm going to learn this and not be afraid. And then I felt so good at the little bit of stuff that I learned. And then I played with it more. And then Courtney and I worked a few things out. And it was really exciting because then suddenly not having somebody have to lay things out for me, I was getting visions of what I could do in my classroom beyond coding, beyond just the algorithms. Like, I could really get the little Ozobot to do some procedure writing with my students. And then they would have to talk and go back and realize they didn't explain what they needed to explain. In third grade, they have to suddenly write 5 enormous paragraphs, which is really intimidating because they're not always ready. And I spent 10 years in fourth grade. I spent 4 years in special ed. I think the biggest curriculum jump is second grade to third grade. And suddenly they write a few sentences in a paragraph and they're not realizing that there's a whole job to do. And then Ozobot makes them talk and write and explain. And now suddenly everything is so much more exciting. Courtney and I played with that guy the first night and things were coming to me, how I could bring this guy into my classroom. I don't teach math. And I'm like, I have great math things to do. So I'm very excited to understand what it is and the basis for it with my children and my students. And then to show them how it can take it so much further without even thinking about it.
When I first started teaching and in Springfield, 2010, 2011, back before we had Common Core standards, and I taught fifth grade, I remember having to teach sequencing. I can't remember the exact wording in the standard, but that was like one of the standards that we had to teach. And looking back, I'm like, well, that's essentially teaching algorithmic thinking. Like, not having a computer science word to it. So I think for me, when I first started teaching and learning more computer science in the last couple of years before I left to take this position,
I really started to see, well, computer science is not just coding on the computer. There's so much more to it. And so I know for me, I can think of unplugged activities, which pre any computer science knowledge, like that doesn't make any sense. Do you need a computer to do computer science? It's right there in the name. With going to Boston the last month and a half ago, whenever it was recently, I don't know, all these days blend together in the summer and they go too fast. What kind of unplugged activities did you all find that made you really excited? Because I can definitely see with kindergarten the difficulties of using the keyboard when you can't spell your name, or you're learning to spell your name, for example.
Or just learning the alphabet. And we talk about it all the time too, that we mostly teach our letters in lowercase, and you look at a keyboard and they're in uppercase. So that's a whole nother distinction they have to make as well. And we have a large EL population, or English language learner population. So that's a whole different mix into it. But one thing that I recently discovered was just, I was doing the happy mapping activity and I thought to myself, well, how can I extend this out further? You know, They had the printed activity with the 4x4 square, where they had the little flurb and he had to go to his fruit. And if I know one thing about 5-year-olds is that they love a competition. So I thought, you know, how could I make this, you know, a little harder for them, or a little more, you know, engaging. So what I ended up doing was I made 5 different grids. I made a 3x3. I had the 4x4 that was provided. I think I did a 5x5, a 7x7, and an 8x8 grid. And what I had my students do is I had the 5 levels set up. And at the bottom of the little map, I had a little X with a line, and they had to get Miss Cyrus's signature. And their job was to move their flurb from one end of the map to the other end. Now, they got to pick where their flurb started, and they got to pick the fruit and where he ended on the map. So as they're doing this activity, you know, some kids were taking their time and they were really trying to really think about it. And then I noticed halfway through the lesson, some kids were just doing all across the top and all across the bottom. You know, so I thought through my lesson, how can I make this even more difficult for them, you know, as they're trying to clear through the levels? Because at the end, what I had created was I took a little piece of cardboard and I cut it out, and I just used craft glue and I put these tiny little gems onto it, and I called it the diamond flurb. So if they completed all 5 levels and got my signature, they were the happy map coding champions and they got to win the first ever created diamond flurb. So that was their motivation to get to the end. So some kids were flying through the level. So their final challenge was to use every square in the 8x8 grid. So what I have to do afterwards, once they thought they completed it, is I have to go through and track it and see if I can get my finger to the fruit from the flurb. And I mean, I thought they were going to do great, but I watched a pair of 3 kids. They all had a different colored marker, and you could tell on their piece of paper that they were almost doing paired programming off the screen, because you could tell they were taking turns, because there was a blue marker, a green marker, then a red marker, a green marker, a blue marker, and a red marker. So I could tell they were taking turns. And as they're doing it, they're saying, no, turn left, turn right, you know, go up, go down. We got to make sure he makes it to the fruit. And, you know, in the end, they all made it through all the levels. And then the kids who kind of, you know, sped through it, they went through and they helped the other students, you know, who maybe weren't going so fast through the grids. And it was great to see their teamwork and just their sheer excitement, you know, of the combination of the on-screen and off-screen. Because 2 days prior, they were doing the up, down, left, right coding on-screen. And then we pulled it back off-screen. And then this next week, we're going to go back on-screen. So it's a great mix. And it's great for them to see how they can apply what they've done off the screen onto the screen. And they just love hands-on activities. So anything in any way that I can apply that to them, you know, I love to do that.
So what is a flurb? You said that many times, and I don't know if everybody who's listening knows exactly what that
is. It's just like a little character that the code.org has created. If you can imagine like a cloud with like 2 eyeballs and a little side smile, that's what he looks like. And he just travels throughout the map. So my kids also love Minecraft. So they love it. Diamonds and obsidians and all those different things. So they thought the gems on the diamond flurbs were all those different things as well. So kind of, again, pulling those on screen elements off screen and showing them that like it really does apply to their real life learning.
I will be working with a grade 4 class with a Pringles can, and they are going to actually connect to a way that soldiers were messaging in World War II. Now, I won't start off by telling them that, because I will want them to have fun with it and learn with it first. And then I'm going to show them how soldiers used it for real communication and to save lives. And they will encrypt messages with one another. So we're looking forward to it. They see the Pringles can, so they're excited, and the letter codings. So we'll be working on that Tuesday. Last week I was doing some coding with some first grade students, and they were matching colors and words and letters, and it was really cool. And the second thing I did was something I think that we've all done as students, and then we didn't really name it as younger kids, where we gave them a symbol and a letter to match, and we unlocked secret messages. And kindergarten did that with us, and it was an upper first grade activity, and they rocked it. They had such a great time. And then they made up their own codes, and then they solved the code that I made. So, and we did that with sight words. So things after learning coding and the power of it and the purpose of it will just come naturally. And I say that excitedly because I sometimes have to see things be done to get ideas come to me. I'm a visual learner and I like to see. I saw a few things and I understand the purpose of, you know, the coding and the OzBot, and things just come, and it's a very exciting tool. I think it's powerful. I think it takes away a lot of stereotypes that, you know, certain kids like math or certain kids like reading. Everybody just keeps diving in, and they were so eager to help one another. The power of the conversation that happened, I think, was the most heartfelt part of the lesson.
That's awesome. One of the things I know I loved about teaching summer school was it allowed me to experiment and try out different things, because during the school year, you have more students, and you have to kind of stick to a mapping to make sure that everybody is where they're supposed to be. So, and again, because of fifth grade and how much testing we had to do with MCAS and ANET and unit assessments and all of that, summer, I really took the time to try to be more creative with my teaching and to figure out what can I do to bring back into the next school year with students. Do either of you find that with all this computer science activities and things that you've learned this summer, are there things that you feel that you can bring back into your classrooms?
I love summer school. I love summer school. I loved it when I was third grade, fourth grade. I love it. I love it when I have my own students that are going to the next level, because I know where they are and I can just teach. And I know that my principal believes in us at our building to just teach, teach, teach. So there's no scripted lessons. And I think, and I say it every year to every teacher that ever wants to do it, my best teaching is summer school. I'm not on a script. I know the scripts have purposes. I really do. I don't want to, you know, discredit the smart people that make those scripts. But my best teaching comes with those 12 kids in front of me, because I know them. Or when I get the grade that's coming in next, because we do get the trickiest kids that need the most, right? So I'm building relations, and we are working. And right now, I'm lucky enough to be the coordinator. It's a wonderful opportunity, but the second grade class will be my class, and I'm going in there coding and I am building relations, because we all know that the kids that come in summer are often the ones that need us the most. They need those relationships. They need those baselines. And my goal is that we're going in there coding on a level playing field, and we are going to learn some really exciting stuff. And when we go into the classroom in August, we're going to have a relationship built, and it's going to start with coding. And then when I open that lesson up and I show it to the whole classroom, my 7 or 8 hardest kids that, you know, are often the most intimidated or have been with me all summer for harder reasons than everybody else are going to go back pumped, feeling better than everybody else and ready to share. It'll be their whole moment to shine with the class, because they are going to feel some solid connections with all of the coding, with me and themselves. And they're going to talk and explain the lessons. That's my goal.
I feel I'm lucky to only have 6 kids in my summer school class this year. So I've really had a lot of time to, you know, get to know them and really see them while they're doing their computer science. And I think a lot of stuff has really led me to, you know, realizing that typing has a lot to do with computer science and the keyboard. So I've been able to take a lot of time in summer school to really help them with like typing.com and just having them form, you know, see where the keys are on the keyboard. I have a very high population of ELs. 5 out of my 6 are English language learners in summer school. So I'm seeing, you know, maybe where their confusions are, you know, things that might have frustrated me in the classroom with 23, I'm just noticing is a slight confusion now, and I could fix it, you know, within a minute, where before I might get frustrated, you know, just brush it off. And that child still sits there confused. So it really just gives me the lens of like taking a step back and maybe seeing why someone that young is so confused. Because I think we see kids too who are 4 and 5 and we say, oh my God, they're experts with technology, right? They know how to play iPads. They know how to get on the phone. You know, the parents can understand why they can unlock the phone, but they don't know their letters and their numbers, you know, because it's a combination. Like you said, it's a sequence. You know, they learn the sequence. They may not actually know what they're clicking, but when they start to put the steps together, you can really see that light bulb and that click in their little heads, even at 5 years old, which I think is so incredible. It is not something I saw in my classroom when we were introducing computer science last year. So I'm really excited to slow computer science down in kindergarten and really give them that time to explore the technology, see how we take care of it, see how you can be a safe and productive member of the computer science community, and how we can do it on screen and off screen. Because it's very easy just to take a kid and stick them on a computer and say, go, 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 try, try, try. But you really want to make sure they're understanding the whole concept and why they're there and why they're using that computer science. You know, at the training, we did an activity that talked about, you know, things that are electric and things that are not. And we're told to put on our student brains. And I thought as a kindergartner, the only thing that I would say is technology is a computer, right? Because that's what we talk about. They don't really see a microwave or a fridge or a car or something like that as being technology. So really showing them that technology is also integrated within the world way more than they know, like the stoplights, and just giving them that knowledge so that way they have an even playing field with every other student when it comes to computer science knowledge.
With summer coming to an end, and both of you are not computer science teachers. I'm right with that.
Yeah.
I haven't had any training at all, except for in Boston. I didn't even know why my students were feeding that cat during my reading lesson on Scratch That Code last year. I was like, why do I hear a meow? What is going on? And they were taking care of some cat during my reading, and I had no idea what they were doing.
So knowing that, and knowing that during the school year, we have scripts that we follow and mapping that we keep up with, have you thought about ways that you're going to integrate computer science? And can you give us a couple of examples?
I'm definitely going to pull it in during morning meeting. I've thought of some opportunities there. I don't want to bring them in every single day. I want it to be a challenge that they look forward to. I also thought of so many ways to bring it during my small group work where the students are working independently. So we have a must do, what the district likes us to do, and the should do and the can do. He can still be in the must do. We can put Azabah in the must do, and they can use him to do procedural writing, and they can use him to track and stop sight words. He can also go into math and track algorithms and solve problems as he goes along. So there are endless opportunities to bring coding in, but I'd like to bring him in during morning meeting and show him the fun sides and the unplugged activities. And then during the must do, should do, can do's, I would like to incorporate him into writing and sight word activity and vocabulary so that we have the fun side and then the purposeful side, something to look forward to engage that opportunity and make learning exciting.
I just hope to bring, you know, skills that will benefit them in future grades. You know, we hear a lot about sequencing and algorithms, how we're going to use this in writing and reading. I didn't realize how many unplugged activities there were for coding. You know, going to Boston, we played with a lot of different robots and a lot of different sequencing activities. And I think that is more of the aspect I would love to bring into my classroom. I think it excites them. I think when they put a sequence together and that robot moves, or even when it doesn't, you know, and they have to problem solve and they have to figure out, they really do work as a team to try to figure out that problem. And they really don't give up. I mean, it really is incredible to watch them try to, you know, figure out these things, because sometimes I can't even do it. And they're like, oh, you know, Miss Cyrus, you just hit this button, boom, 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 and it's going again. You know, I've had experience with the B-bot, and I just, after going to that conference, there's like so many other things that are just like that. And I think if we start giving these kids these vocabulary words and these activities starting in kindergarten, when they get to, you know, Miss Toro in third, fourth grade, they're already going to have these basic knowledges, and they will be able to use, you know, per se Ozbot in the reading and writing activity, because they already know how Ozbot works. You know, they know that he has a sequence of codes, and, you know, they can maybe know how to tell a story, you know, You could draw a story map in kindergarten. You know, it doesn't always have to include written or oral language, you know, because that could be difficult for our little guys. And like I said before, really just slowing it down and showing them how the computer works. You know, they still are little babies at 5 years old. So we want to make sure they have the care and the instructions and they know how to get on there. So they're successful for further grades too, because I want to make sure I'm also creating, you know, self-sufficient computer users. I want them able to log on by themselves, turn it off and on by themselves, and know how to be on the internet safely, because it's a scary place out there. And I want them to know how to be active members of the computer science community.
Yeah, a lot of that digital citizenship things are very important. I know we're running up on time here, and thank you for, again, taking some of your Friday where you don't have to be in summer school. But the last question I really want to get to is, prior to teaching computer science, you had one thought process about what it was and what it was like. And now that you have had a lot of exposure to computer science, what do you think's really changed in your minds about computer science and how it works in the classroom and in IRL, in real life?
I think just the, I wouldn't know how to word it, but just, you know, it's easier than I thought to bring it into the classroom setting. I know I thought it would be something that I would have to do a lot more training on and, you know, be very good at. And I always thought of myself as just being a really good kindergarten teacher. And now I see myself as a really good computer science teacher as well. You know, I wouldn't say I know it all. I wouldn't actually say I really know how computer science completely works. I would say I definitely still have a very baseline understanding of computer science, but I can really see how with a little bit of effort and some understanding of the basis on how computer science works, how a lot of teachers could really drive that instruction home for their students and really get to know their students too. I think that's something I've learned about this process, is like, you have to know your students when you're teaching them this curriculum. Like, you have to know when you're going too fast or going too slow, when they need extra practice, when they don't. I think as a teacher, I have a better gauge of that now, and to know what to look for, you know, while they're doing these programs and while they're doing these activities, to see where I need to maybe pull back or where I need to repeat something, or maybe where I can go a little ahead, because that's something that they're really starting to understand. And I'm just really excited to bring it to even the littlest of guys, because again, we don't always think of them as being capable or able, or maybe just too little, or maybe they are experts, but they some know it all and some don't know it. So it's really good that they're all going to have the same opportunities and the ability to learn those computer science skills.
For me, not being the computer science teacher and focusing on reading and writing, that is definitely my first love. I love reading. I love writing. I love the biggest struggle with reading and writing. So I feel like that's let me dive into the curriculum and accept the scripted lessons for the reasons they want us to. Being able to bring this into the classroom, I want to know more. I want to learn more. I am so grateful and thankful for that opportunity. And it made a huge difference learning it outside of my school, learning it with people I don't know and not being intimidated. And it's really hard to be that teacher who's been in the building 18 years, because, and my first thought was, I love working with Courtney because she's so young. So bouncing ideas is great, you know, and you get the best of both worlds. You know, I grew up in the city. I lived in the city. I graduated from the city. I get these kids and I love being here and I love my school. I'm dedicated to my school and my students. And then I have Courtney, who's young and smart and wicked energetic to bounce ideas off of, and just learning it with her and bouncing ideas on where her kids are and where my kids are and being able to bring that back into the classroom. It's been a wonderful, a little intimidating collaboration. I loved learning with Courtney. I love learning as it is. I want to learn more. We are checking that site a couple times a week, trying to find out when can we go learn more, because being departmentalized, I'm not getting trained for this. We are not getting the trainings. So we had an opportunity. We didn't even ask any questions. We said, sure, we'll go. Sure. Sign us up. We knew nothing about it. I said, I don't even know where they're sending us to, you. And she said, no, I don't know. I said, but I can't wait. And we were so excited. We actually didn't find out kind of details till a couple of weeks later. We're like, you want to fill us in? Because we don't know where we're going. But that's how excited we were to have the opportunity to go and learn about this and bring it back to the classroom.
That's awesome. I know I said that was going to be my final question, but with the podcast, it never is the final question. One of the things from the digital learning playbook, a book that a lot of schools used at the beginning of COVID to kind of learn with teaching remotely, the very first chapter is all about self-care. And I can think back to when I was teaching and I never did self-care very well. It was all, I was pretty much 24/7 working, whether I was at the building or at home. And so for me, it was kind of eye-opening to be like, this is important for us to be able to work with our students well. We need to also be taking care of ourselves, which has led to this final question of, what are some things that you're doing to take care of yourselves over the last couple of years?
Self-care for me really means time with my family, time unplugging. And I understand that. But self-care for me also means new opportunities to learn, because I need to constantly try to learn something to feel good, because the world is constantly changing. And, you know, sometimes my principal will say, Karen, are you sure you want to sign up for that PD? I'm like, yes, I do. Yes, I do. I need to keep learning. I need to know. I need to be in the know. I do unplug. I know how to unplug. I have 5 books over there I'm going to read this summer before I go back to school. And 2 of them are trash. I can't wait. But one of them's a school book. No, that's not the truth. 2 are school books, 2 are trash, and 1's for fun. So I know how to unplug in self-care, and I do know that it's important. But for some people, self-care does involve to continue learning so you feel recharged, so you can bring it back in. And, you know, this really matters to me. And it doesn't, I don't think all people understand, like, I'll constantly tell my principal, I love Portrait of a Grad. And CS and Portrait of a Grad really do go together. And I'm excited that that's going to happen, and we're going to be in cohort 2. And I'm excited. I've been on Portrait of a Grad since the very, very beginning. So I've watched that all change. And she said, Karen, are you sure you want to do this? I'm like, you don't understand. I like to learn and know and, you know, process, and it makes connections and it makes sense to me. That's self-care for me when I'm learning and I'm bringing it back to my kids. For real.
I always make the joke with my kids, if they ever see Miss Cyrus at the beach, I run in the other direction, because that's my favorite form of self-care, you know, just relaxing on the beach on a nice hot day. But I do agree with Karen. I have a working mind. You know, I'm getting my master's right now. I'm going to go get my doctorate right after. You know, I think education is a world that changes back and forth, but I think there's a lot of constants in it too. So I want to be a very well-informed educator, you know, all around. You know, I teach kindergarten, you know, it is my passion. That's why I take these opportunities in computer science and upper level thinking. So I want to be a reading specialist too. And I want to engage with all students. And I, you know, even just making the diamond flurbs, like, I love crafting. So that was something, you know, where I took my love for computer science and my love for relaxation and I put them together. And, you know, it helped me and my self-care, and it also helps students achieve in the classroom. So anything that I can double dip with as well, I love to do. You know, any extra trainings, you know, 24 required by the city, I took 179 last year, you know, just to see what I can learn, you know, and just keep my brain always moving and going. So I do agree with Karen there that, you know, a form of self-care for me is always being in the know and seeing where we are in the educational world and how I can make myself a better educator for my students. Because at the end of the day, that is what makes me happiest behind that door with my 20 plus students.
Awesome. First off, there's no such thing as trashy books that are not fun either.
Trash. So
I'm pretty sure that it's really 3 fun books and 2 educational books. And we won't ask what those books are. So, well, thank you again for taking some time on this Friday. And I'm excited to come visit your classrooms next week and see what's going on.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Thank you, Courtney and Karen, for allowing me to come and interview you and then visit your classroom the week after. It was a lot of fun going to see what these 2 awesome teachers over at Beale are doing with computer science and what they were doing over this past summer. Summer is always a great time to really dive into the methodology of your teaching. And it's so great to see how computer science for these 2 teachers was really brought into that. I'm excited to hear about what they do during the school year. If you're interested, check out the video that we made on going to their school. When I visited, I of course brought my camera and recorded, and it was pretty awesome to see just the excitement on their students' faces as they were learning and growing in their knowledge of computer science. So thank you again. So thank you all for listening. If you liked this episode, please make sure you go out to whatever platform you're listening to on it. Make sure that you're subscribed, of course, and leave us a rating and a review. It's always helpful for us because the more reviews that are left, the more people can hear how awesome Springfield teachers are and the things that are happening in the classroom. I know I appreciate it because I get to see those messages when they come in. Thank you for doing that. Make sure that if you have any colleagues who you think would be great to be interviewed on here, please let me know. I, of course, like to send them a lovely message telling them how awesome they are and how I'd love to talk with them here on the podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SPS Digital Learning Hour. The SPS Digital Learning Hour is written, directed, produced, edited, all the things, all are done by Mike Thomas of Springfield Public Schools.